Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to Morning Edition on KCAW Sitka on this Friday, the 18th day of November, 2011. I'm Jeff Seifert for Raven News. Charter operations in Sitka and Juneau are facing charges related to guided fishing violations. Robert L. Warren, 34, was charged for failing to register a vessel and failing to obtain a sport fish guide logbook. Michael R. Keating, 55, was charged with two counts of sport fish guide operator assisting in a violation. Troopers believe that Keating, owner of Big Blue Fisheries, had Warren take out clients on a boat that Keating knew was unregistered and did not have logbooks assigned. Both men were charged Tuesday in Juneau. Their arraignment is scheduled for November 29th in Juneau District Court. Troopers have also brought wildlife charges against a Juneau resident. They allege that Michael L. Duby, 61, provided guided services without a license. According to charging documents, Duby was working for his son's company, Fish Hunter Charters, as a licensed guide in 2007. Investigators say that he guided a saltwater sport fish charter in April 2008 while on his son's boat, the Brody. He did not have a valid license in his possession and listed his 2007 license number in the vessel's logbook. Duby has already run afoul of Montana Fish and Game authorities for poaching there. His son, Michael Patrick Duby, age 37, was also convicted on the Montana charges. He is currently awaiting sentencing for shooting migratory birds in Alaska and selling their parts on the Internet, a violation of federal law. Court documents also state that Michael Patrick Duby is under investigation for illegal guiding activity, but state prosecutors have not yet filed any charges. Arraignment of Michael W. Duby is planned for December 8th in Juneau District Court. It's a little unusual for a radio station to report on itself, but a recent discovery here at the Cable House has resulted in the need to do just that. This fall, contractors have been making some improvements to Raven Radio's 103-year-old building. On October 31st, workers digging in the basement found a human skeleton. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
The remains were found in between two slabs of bedrock and are believed to be very old. KCAW General Manager Ken Fate says when the discovery was made, work was stopped immediately.
And the first thing we had to do was figure out what to do.
The police were contacted and, with the help of an archaeologist, determined that the remains were old and that the area was not a crime scene. Forest Service archaeologist Jay Kinsman then looked over the site for other materials, namely wood or fiber.
Those things would be clues as to when the bones were there. And possibly where the bones had come from, but there was none of that.
Fate says Kinsman was unable to determine the age, sex, or ethnicity of the remains.
Erring on the side of caution, we determined that we'd better treat them as if they might be culturally significant, and we determined that we wanted to contact the Sitka Tribe of Alaska, and that's what we went ahead and did.
The tribe's cultural committee met, and elders were contacted. Sitka Tribe Resource Protection Director Jeff Feldpouch said the elders decided to offer a blessing over the remains.
Initially, they felt the ceremony should be done regardless whether the remains were native or not, and basically, pay respects and apologize for the disturbance.
Fate from KCAW says the next step is to learn more.
The area appears to be, according to the archaeologist on site, fill that was put in place in the Russian era. And so whether or not the skeleton was there before the building was put up or after is unknown. And talking to elders that came over from the Sitka Tribe of Alaska, they indicated that this area was not a village site and was not a cemetery. And so there is an element of mystery about where these bones came from and when. And to the best of our ability, we're hoping to respectfully find out as much as we can and do the right thing by these bones.
Feldpouch told the tribal council during its regular meeting on Wednesday that learning more could involve DNA testing. If the bones are not native, then the tribe's involvement would likely conclude. If they are native bones, Feldpouch says there could be a reinterment of the remains in a more suitable location and other protocols.
I'm not totally familiar with them, but I know there have been some reburials in the past, so we're going to rely on those elders to pass that knowledge on.
Meanwhile, work continues underneath the cable house. The area of the basement containing the skeleton remains cordoned off and will be undisturbed. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
The Sitka Tribe of Alaska's Tribal Council ratified the results of its election on Wednesday, but not before getting an earful from concerned citizens over some questioned ballots. Tribal citizen Betty Jo Moore told the Tribal Council she had a variety of concerns about the election, including the list of eligible voters, which she believes to be inaccurate. She was concerned specifically about three people who had to vote question ballots during the tribe's November 8th election. She said their ballots should be counted. One of those whose ballot was questioned, Vicki Martin, said for her, being left off the eligible voter list was a personal affront to her tribal citizenship.
I lived here for 22 years. My daughter for 18. And I'm trying so hard to turn that other cheek, but one time after time, I get slapped by my own people. I am sorry. But my vote, my rights, better count because I am who I am.
Tribal Council member Harvey Kitka moved to accept the election results and count the three questioned ballots. He said the citizen in question, or citizens, were well-known citizens of the tribe and that their eligibility shouldn't be in question. Council member Tanya Benorden agreed.
I agree with Mr. Kitka that we know these people, and when does traditional Tlingit law override anything like our Constitution? I really feel there's many gray areas where our Constitution falters for our people.
The Tribal Council unanimously supported counting the three ballots, and the election results were ratified. The three votes, when officially tallied, will not make a difference in the outcome of the election. Dale Williams, Archie Nielsen, Wade Martin, and Ben Maiacedo all won seats on the Tribal Council. They're scheduled to be sworn in at the next regular meeting. Also at the meeting Wednesday night, the Tribal Council dismissed an ethics complaint made against one of its members. The complaint took issue with remarks Tribal Council member Stephanie Edenshaw made on Facebook. According to Edenshaw, the complaint was lodged by Lauren Estes. Edenshaw's comments expressed displeasure with the actions of fellow members of the Tribal Council and tribe staff. Edenshaw, who was not up for re-election this year, urged citizens to vote on November 8th for, quote, a real Alaska Native with tribal values, unquote. An ad hoc committee formed to investigate the complaint could not reach consensus, and the council unanimously dismissed the complaint Wednesday night. Edenshaw asked to read a letter she'd written responding to the complaint, but was advised not to. After the meeting, she said she wanted tribal citizens to know her side of the story.
In order to keep peace with the council, you know, I guess at this point I'm just going to let it go and not submit that letter, even though I passed it out.
Edenshaw distributed the letter to the council and reporters during the meeting. In the letter and last night to the council, Wednesday night that is, she stood by her remarks. Marine Mammal Observer boats will be on the grounds with the Southeast Alaska Gillnet Fleet for the next several years. It's the Panhandle's turn for the Observer program, which documents marine mammal and seabird interactions with fisheries around the state. The observers will shadow individual gillnetters each opening and gather broader information from the fleet as well. Federal officials recently discussed the upcoming effort with Petersburg gillnetters. Matt Lichtenstein reports.
A handful of local gillnetters and several other area residents turned out for the meeting with the National Marine Fisheries Service and Saltwater Inc., an Alaska-based contractor that will actually run the observer program on the grounds in Southeast. Their plan is to observe marine mammal interactions and injuries in District 6 and 8 fisheries around Petersburg and Wrangell in the summer of 2012 and 2013. They'll cover gillnetters in the region's other management areas in subsequent years. The monitoring is required periodically for a variety of fisheries across the nation as part of the U.S. Marine Mammal Protection Act.
We want to do this in a statistically reliable way. We can't know every single incident that occurs, so we do sampling to make estimates.
Bridget Mansfield is the Alaska Marine Mammal Observer Program Coordinator for NIMS. She noted that the law allows for a certain amount of incidental takes of marine mammals, incidents where fishermen might unintentionally injure or kill an animal like a whale or a sea lion in the course of their normal operations. The law requires fishermen report such takes, whether it's a sea lion, a humpback whale, or another marine mammal. They also have to comply with other monitoring requirements like the Observer Program and work to reduce any takes. Mansfield said there's not necessarily concern about a particular stock in Southeast.
But our whole point in coming in here, and I am going to get to this in a minute, but is to really get an objective assessment of what's going on. And this is a requirement throughout the country, and we are just trying to get a baseline set of information, which we do not have at this point.
In previous years, NIMS has monitored gillnet fisheries in several other areas of the state, including Prince William Sound, the Alaska Peninsula, Cook Inlet, Kodiak, and Yakutat. While NIMS focuses marine mammals, Mansfield said they would also be gathering information on seabird injury and mortality for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. For each day of each gillnet opening in Districts 6 and 8, observers will each monitor one specific permit holder who will be chosen from a randomly generated list and notified ahead of time. The goal is to cover 7.5% of effort fishery-wide. Along with recording any marine mammal and bird interactions, Mansfield explained that observers will collect a broader spectrum of data about the vessel's gear, effort, catch, and bycatch, as well as weather and other environmental conditions on the grounds. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
New legislation would allow the Coast Guard to blow up vessels seized for illegal fishing. The measure from Senator Mark Begich and Representative Don Young follows the Coast Guard seizure of a ship suspected of illegal fishing in September. A federal judge must sign off on the disposition of that ship. The measure provides options for dealing with seized vessels in the future, including letting the Coast Guard sink them in live fire training exercises. For that to happen, fishing gear, fuel, and other potential debris would have to be removed, and the ship sunk more than 50 miles offshore in water over a mile deep. That's it for Raven News for this hour. You can hear these stories again and other stories at our website, kcaw.org. You're listening to KCAW Sitka. It's 1 minute past the hour. Good morning.